This is the Rookie Big Board Mailbag episode. I'm your host, Matt Hicks, the FF Educator, here with Matt Cooper. Cooper, we're tossing aside Skip this week. He didn't want to hang with us, so I'm jumping in here. This is going to fill in as the Devy episode of the week. So let's kick it off here. How are things going, man? I know it's rookie grind season. You're putting out a lot with the Couch Scouts. You're putting out a lot of content in general. We've got a fun mailbag here to chop it up. So I'm feeling good. How are you feeling?
Yeah, man, I'm good. This is actually my second podcast of the night. I just finished recording with Couch Scouts like 7 minutes before we jumped on this one. So yeah, it's definitely grind season. I've had a couple people, you know, ask me to guest on shows. It's a busy time at work too, just wrapping up the college semester. So the next couple weeks, it's going to be a little crazy, and then we'll be through it, and it'll be the summer, and we'll be super bored, and we'll miss this time. So just soak it up. There's nothing in the dynasty summer to talk about. So enjoy it while it lasts, I guess.
That's when we just start digging into like the third string of CFF rosters and just trying to really dig in and find some gold mines here. But you know, I hear you. I just dropped a video over on the YouTube. So it's a YouTube only video, highlighting some pass catching running backs that you might want to target rounds three or later. We're dropping this after this. I'm going to jump on, you know, flip on some tape, try to hit the 80 prospect mark. I'm at 77 right now. So I'll get a couple guys in. Tis the season, but I'm glad we get to take break, chop it up here. You know, we decided this point in the year, man, we wanted to dig in, give the patrons a little bit of a chance to showcase some questions that they're asking. So we dropped it in the Rookie Big Board Discord. We posted over on Patreon just for our patrons a few questions, and we're going to pull about six out of the mailbag here for this episode. Want to remind folks, you know, if you want to get in on that Discord, if you want to get in on that Patreon access, now's the time. Folks, if you are listening to this podcast two, three times a week and you are not in on the Rookie Big Board, I don't know what you're doing. We're not even scratching the surface with the insight that we're able to give you here on the podcast. Head on over to patreon.com/rookiebigboard for $5 a month. You're going to get full access to the Discord with personalized roster advice. The on-the-clock Discord channel just goes absolutely wild after the NFL draft. I absolutely love it. The 2024 rookie guide will be updated the Sunday after the NFL draft, including 2024 seasonal projections for all these rookies, rookie rankings, Devy rankings, dynasty rankings. We got it all, folks. 15% off with the annual sub. With that being said, we're going to go right into sicko mode. We're going to dive right in here. We have a question coming in from the Patreon, Stefan Carpio, asking us about a group of in-depth wide receivers.
Very in-depth.
I know Cooper's smiling here because he's ready to dig into it. So he's asking about four wide receivers: Jalen Coker, the wide receiver out of the Holy Cross; Joshua Cephas out of UTSA Meet the Roadrunners; Cornelius Johnson from Michigan; and Taj Washington from USC. Between the two of us, we've got all these guys watched. I've got three out of four. I don't have eyes on Cornelius Johnson, but Cooper, I know you have eyes on Cornelius Johnson. So maybe why don't we start here? What's your overall impressions of Johnson? Any interest here in, you know, fourth round, fifth round, maybe sixth round for some deeper rookie leagues?
Not really. It was one of those things that, like, he was on our sheet for Dynasty Nerds that we wanted to get some film on, I guess, because he got a combine invite. If I'm remembering that correctly, because we put everybody who gets a combine invite on our sheet. He's listed at 6'3", 208. That's the Michigan measurement. I don't know what the actual combine measurement was. So he's got some good size to him. Fifth year senior, older guy, similar to Roman Wilson, actually, he had his best season this year as a fifth-year senior with 604 yards and one touchdown, which as a best season is not great. The only that I've watched him was actually not like just sitting down and studying the tape, but was cutting up his films for the Nerds Film Room, because I had done all these Michigan games earlier in the year doing JJ McCarthy and Blake Corum and Roman Wilson. And then I saw Cornelius Johnson got added to the sheet, and I was like, okay, well, I better go back and cut him as well. So I did four or five games of Cornelius Johnson and just didn't really see anything that jumped out too much to me. So, yeah, I think out of this group of four, Taj Washington is the one that's most likely to get drafted, the one that's most likely to find a role in the NFL. He seems like pretty much a slot-only guy, but he did show some okay things at USC. I don't see any of these guys being fantasy relevant, but Taj seems like the most likely to find a role on an NFL team that may not be a fantasy relevant role, but he's there, he's contributing in the NFL, so... What do you think about these guys?
Yeah, I think Taj Washington is the guy who I would identify as the most likely to have a legitimate role in the NFL. I think he's the one you can clearly peg into an offense, right? You can kind of see where he fits. He is going to be a more effective traditional slot wide receiver, but I think he's quick. I think he's fluid. You know, he moves well east to west. I do think he closes space fairly quickly. I like his controlled feet. I do think he's got a little bit of that yak upside. I think he can be elusive in space, accelerates well in a straight line. You know, I wouldn't call him a developed route runner, but, you know, work a drag, work a dig, you know, a little bit of a curl route. You put him on the seam. Maybe we can get some vertical route. I do think, you know, he struggles physically. You can see him get pushed off routes. I think he's an absolute liability in the blocking game. I mean, he just like, he didn't even want to throw his body in front of guys. So I think that's probably his limitation, but I think he's probably like a round six guy. I do think he gets drafted. And in the right spot, you know, you could be a round six guy and start in a slot role, you know, right away in the NFL, depending on the team. So
yeah, like Kyle Phillips, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Kyle Phillips hangs around on the end of dynasty rosters, but you never really want to start him. But he does play on the NFL field enough that, like, every once in a while he'll get you a 10-point game or something. I could see that for Taj Washington, that type of a role.
Yeah, Kyle Phillips was an absolute legend for 2 months. Unfortunately, those 2 months were May and June of the year he got drafted. But he does. He still hangs around. I got to tell you, the Joshua Cephas, I was a little skeptical because I watch a decent amount of UTSA, and I know, you know, I've got eyes on Cephas from a CFF perspective. I just thought he was very mid, like all around. I really, when it comes to prospects, I want them to excel somewhere. And I just didn't really see anywhere where Cephas excelled. Like, he's got good hands. You know, I do think he can ball track fairly well, but he seemed pretty rigid to me. Kind of a slow mover. He gets jammed on his routes a little bit too often for me. So just not much there for me. And Jalen Coker, with all the hype he got, you know, there's not too much Holy Cross tape out there, but, you know, at least getting my eyes on the BC game, just fine. You know, I could see, I do think maybe Coker ends up a 7th round pick, you know, very late. Or, you know, the other thing to just throw in mind here before we kind of open it up with any other thoughts of some later round guys that we might like, you know, just keep in mind, folks, if you like one of these guys, right, and they go undrafted, sometimes being a preferred, you know, UDFA, like one of these guys that signs in the first couple hours after the draft, sometimes that's better, right? They have a little bit more control over where they go. Sometimes those guys could actually get paid almost as well, if not a little bit better than guys who go in the 7th round. So, you know, just keep that in mind. But Cooper, before we move on to the next question coming in from Jason, you know, I'm curious, you know, are there any guys who might go round 6, round 7 that you would, you know, kind of catches your eye a little bit more? You would keep a little bit more on your radar?
I mean, yes and no. No, because if a guy goes round 6 or later, the chances of him ever being dynasty relevant, which at the end of the day, that's what we want, right, is very, very slim. But if I had to pick a guy, I would – maybe throw out Anthony Gould from Oregon State.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
When I watched his tape, he kind of popped a little bit. Like, he's very undersized. I believe he's in that, like, what's that guy's name? Played at Memphis a couple years ago. Calvin Austin.
Yep.
I believe he's in the Calvin Austin.
5'8", 174. A little bit bigger.
Yeah, not big, not particularly fast, but very, very quick. He's a super limited player. Like, he's a slot only guy. You know, he's not going to be making contested catches. He's not going to be winning against press coverage, that type of thing. But of these like later round guys that project as slot only, I thought he showed me the most as a route runner, the most quickness in and out of breaks, and the most after the catch ability. So I think, you know, if I was going to throw a dart on one of these guys that realistically is day three for sure, Anthony Gould would probably be my guy.
I think the upside with Gould is that he's an effective special teams player. You know, one of the things we talk about the rookie big board a lot is if you're going to take a stab on adding one of these guys to your bench or your taxi squad, you know, if you draft somebody who's going to play special teams, they're going to be on the 53-man roster, which just means they're there. They're present. They have a better chance of getting that quick volume if an injury pops up. I'll throw out Ryan Flourney out of Southeast Missouri. Well, by the time this episode drops, we'll either be close to having a video out or it'll be out breaking down some of my favorite guys from the FCS because, yeah, that's my mindset right now. I'm like, let's make a video about FCS guys. and I think Flourney, you know, he's out of Southeast Missouri, SEMO. He's got a little bit to him. Like, I think he's got reliable hands. You know, he'll snag off-target passes in stride. You know, one thing that's not easy to quantify, but he makes things look effortless, and I like when my wide receivers kind of make things look easy. He moves downfield well in a straight line. He did well with his athletic testing. I think he could be a really effective flanker in the NFL. And I was able to get some, you know, legitimate Power 5 tape. So Southeast Missouri against Kansas State, against Iowa State, in over a course of 2 years, I think he looked good in both those games. And when you can play up, right, that competition, that's going to be a nice little check mark for me. So let's head more towards the front of the draft here. Let's talk about, you know, that trade back scenario. So Jason asks on the Patreon here, is there a draft worth trading back to, or is this a draft? Sorry. Is this a draft worth trading back to acquire more picks in the later rounds? For example, let's say I have 2 first rounders and 3 second rounders. Should I trade back to get a couple extra seconds and build kind of more? So it's a quantity versus quality conversation, right? Sure. In this draft class, do you like the depth and where are those tier breaks for you? Let's start in the first round. Like, where's that tier break for you where you're open to the idea of moving back and picking up maybe an extra second round pick or a future pick?
So I think it's pretty chalk at this point, but the top 8 with the 4 quarterbacks, the 3 wide receivers, and Bowers. And there's a tier break after that. So, you know, if I'm sitting there at, you know, pick 4 and I can move back to pick 6 and pick up a second rounder, like I'm at least considering that for sure, because this is a deep class and there's going to be some good players available in the second round. If I'm at pick 7 and somebody's offering me a second to move back to 9, I'm not doing that because there's a huge tier break in my mind between 7 and 9. And you could argue that, you know, maybe one of these running backs, if they get day 2 capital in the right landing spot, are going to push that conversation and make you wonder, okay, is it a tier of 9 instead of a tier of 8? Maybe even somebody else in your league will reach on one of those running backs and push back the guys that I view as the top 8 a spot, but I wouldn't want to risk it. So, you know, if I'm in that 1-9 to 1-12 range and I can drop back, you know, a spot or 2 and pick up a second, I'm definitely considering that. 'Cause again, it's in the same tier. So, I would also probably wait until I'm on the clock because I feel like that's when your pick's going to be at the most valuable. Like somebody's going to be, first of all, you're going to have the most knowledge of who is on the board. So you can know, like, all right, the guy that I really wanted made it to me. Do I want to risk it? And if so, like the other person's going to see somebody they really want, and they're going to be more aggressive trying to move up for it than when it's like a just a number, like, oh, 9 or 10 or whatever. Like, there, it's going to be a player that they're like, I'm moving up for this player, and they're going to be willing to pay more. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm viewing the first round. And then early second is pretty similar, like late first, early second, similar to me. I mean, you got that tier of 4 or 5 wide receivers that I feel really good about. Plus, you know, your top 2 or 3 running backs are likely going in that range. And so from 1-9 to probably 202 or 203, I view pretty similarly. And then beyond that, like if you could trade to 204 and get like 209 and 3-2 or something, like I'd consider that. Cause I you know, it gets to a certain point where it's like, the hit rate's not great anyway, and I'd just rather have more darts to throw.
Yeah.
But it's so top heavy. Like that top 8 is just really probably the best top 8 of any draft that I can remember in a long time. And that's, I'm not moving, like I'm not sending 108 for 2 seconds or something. Like,
no, I think you got it right. You know, for me, it's 101 and 102 are in a tier, right? And then you're going to get 103 to 104. 4-5, you know, depending on how things kind of shake out. And then it's down to 108. And it's not that 109 to 1, you know, let's say 109 to 202, right? It's not that those aren't valuable picks. There's, I think, an above average value in that range as well. But you're getting like 10, top 8 pick, you're going to get a dude, right? And you're going to get somebody like who's going to, you're going to get somebody who's you're plugging them into your running, your wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2, quarterback 1, quarterback 2 slot, right?
Tight end.
Once you get to 109 through 112, you know, now we're talking about wide receiver 3, flex, right? Still really good players to have on your roster. Maybe we're talking about the running back 2 on your roster, but you're not going to get the same caliber that you're getting at 108. So That for me is coming.
You know, sorry to cut you off. Or you could, I mean, like, let's say you're in that 110 spot and you want to like take an upside swing on Adonai Mitchell, for example. Yeah. Like that could be a guy that could be plugged into your wide receiver 1 spot, but he's so much less of a sure thing than Marv Neighbors and Odunze. You know, it's like the caliber of those top guys, it's like to get one of those top 3 wide receivers, or, you know, potentially the best tight end we've seen in a long, long time, or, you know, a top 15 pick at quarterback in a super flex league, that top 8, to be picking at 8 and getting any of those guys is just a grand slam.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, when you're at 9, it's like, it's just so much less certain. The guy could hit, he could be really good, but it just feels way less certain to me.
I'm glad you brought up that point, because I think floor, that the relative floor of the top 8 is what I was trying to communicate. You know, it's just a different level of floor that comes with these guys. Because you're right, 109 through 202, quite frankly, through 204, five, you know, 5-6, there's going to be some real big swings you can take, and you can absolutely hit on some of those guys.
Worthy, Brian Thomas, like these guys have huge ceilings.
Yeah.
Just, man, if any of them busted, it wouldn't shock me.
But so once you get past that 109 for me, in general, I agree with the notion of it's quantity, right? Especially I talk about all year round, second round picks. There's a ton of value there. So if you can stack up those early to mid second round picks, I'd definitely be looking to do that. I think that's kind of how you play it. The second part of this question here, you know, third round picks, you know, if you could get third round picks as a throw in, that's great. I wouldn't prioritize them. Although, you know, there's definitely guys I want to, I like there. I just wouldn't move back from the early second round into the third round. A similar question here, Cooper, but not exactly the same, came from the Discord. So folks are clearly thinking along the same lines. Raza Delta asks, at what point in the draft, if at any, do you start to think about, I'm going to trade my current pick on the clock for a 2025 pick? So it's a future pick. We're not thinking about trading back in this year's draft.
I don't know if there's any point that I'm really thinking that. I mean, this is just such a strong class, like one of the strongest we've seen in a long time, especially in the first round. I mean, like 112 this year is way more valuable, I feel like, than 112 in other years that I've been playing the game. So like there have been years, like I remember, I think I was in 2020 or 2021. I forget, whatever year Terrace Marshall Jr. was in the draft, and I was sitting at 112. And Terrace Marshall Jr. was probably the highest rated player available. And I knew that the 2023 draft at that point was a couple years off, but everybody was, you know, in the Devy community, the 2023 class was already being hyped with Bijan and whatever. And I wasn't super enthralled with Terrace Marshall. And my league, it was a home league. None of those guys played Devy. They weren't looking at, oh, the 2023 class, whatever. So for this guy, he was like, man, like, I can go get 112 this year and get the guy that I want, and all I've got to do is give up a random 2023 first round pick like 2 years down the road. So he smashed accepted, and I ended up getting the 102 and got Jahmyr nice. Gibbs for Terrace Marshall Jr.
Nice.
So it can be a good move. I'm just not sure that this is the year to do, because I love this draft class. If it is a team that you think, you know, this could be a higher pick, like, man, his team could really struggle, or, you know, maybe it's 2 years down the road, or, you know, maybe it's you're in the early second and somebody's offering you a future first. Like, yeah, I'll entertain that all day long. But if I think it's going to be in a similar range and I'm just punting a year to a potentially worse draft class, because you got to remember, like, next year's quarterback class in particular is at this point looks really, really rough.
Yeah.
And so why is 112 so strong this year? Partially because you've got four quarterbacks that are pushing the running backs and wide receivers down. You might not get that next year. So anyway, that's a long answer, but that's not something that I'm really looking to do unless I just feel like the other team is being stupid and unrealistic and like, yeah, you're going to trade me your first next year. Like, your team stinks. Yeah, I'll take your first next year. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to look at, you know, be realistic about where you think that pick may go. You know, what I love about the rookie big board, right, is you can directly compare my Devy rankings to my rookie rankings, right? So Luther Burden is currently my top guy in the 2025 class. I've got him at an 8-2 RBBR. That's equal to JJ McCarthy, who I've got 7th, right? So you could say if you're going to get the number one pick next year, that's equal to the 107, just about. And that is factored in time to playing. So that's an equal, you know, the investment of taking the season. The majority of guys, you know, I always say, if you're trading for a future pick, unless you really know that team is bad, then assume it's the 106. That's the best way to go about it.
I agree.
The 106 for me right now in next year's class is Evan Stewart, a 7-4. A 7-4 would be equal to the 202 right now. So I think that's where you're realistically, if you're trading a pick this year, I think you realistically have to evaluate that as like a 202 value, which means I'm not trading back until I get past that point, right? So I'm not trading back for my first round to swap with a first round next year. If you get to 203, 204, and you want to trade back to next year's class, I think that's the appropriate time to do it. There are, you know, fantasy analysts out there that will always tell you, you know, trade back next year. Always trade in your two for your first, right? I don't know. I think for the most part this year, I'm those first 14, 15 picks. I just want to draft a guy, man.
Yeah, they're
this
money.
Is the class to get in on it. You know, we get knocked so much as fantasy analysts for saying, oh, next year. Oh, but wait for next year. No, guys, this is the year. This is the year, you know? So that's where I'm at with it. The analytical, you know, side of me says 202. My heart says probably not.
Yeah, for sure.
Chase Hoke asks in the Discord, Dak Prescott or the 106 in a super flex league? He is in need of a quarterback. So I think he's considering moving his 106 to acquire Dak Prescott. Is that something you're comfortable doing at this point in time?
I think I would. I mean, if you're a contender and you need a quarterback, Dak is a much more sure thing. And you know, maybe JJ McCarthy makes it to 6. Maybe Drake May makes it to 6. But if what you really need is a quarterback and that's what you want and that's the need that you're trying to fill on your team, it's not a guarantee. You know, once the draft capital hype gets in, if all these guys do go in the top 10 of the draft like they're projected to right now, I'm not convinced that any of those guys even makes it to you at six. Mm-hmm. So you're still getting a really good player. You're get, you know, you, you know, if all of those guys go four out of the top six picks, that means you're getting one of Neighbors, Odunze, Marv, Rome, like the Bowers is what I meant to say. So like you're going to get a really good player at 106, maybe even a player that ends up being more valuable than Dak. But if what you really need is a quarterback, that's a safer option to just take Dak than to wait and hope that you get one through the draft. So it really just depends how much that's a need versus you just want to get a good valuable player that's going to increase in value. Cause there's certain teams, certain leagues I would keep the 106, and there's certain ones I would consider moving it for Dak. So, but he says he needs a quarterback. So that's something that's, I think it's a fair deal.
Yeah. What do you think? So right now, you know, Dak in the dynasty rankings is an 8-4. That's equal to Drake May. And so for me, and Drake May right now is still 3 on the rookie big board overall. So that's a plus value, right? I think you're trading the 106 for the equivalent of the 103 in value. So I'd say take the deal, a nice safe floor there. I will always this time of year say, it's close. Will you throw in your third? You know, just to get an extra shot.
You've got the pick because everybody's got the rookie fever.
Right.
So like, you know, if you're the one with Dak and you say, oh, it's close, will you throw in a third? It's probably a no. But if you got that rookie pick, you know, that's what everybody's pining after right now.
Yeah. You know, third round, you get a mid third. Maybe you take a shot on, you know, Ray Davis, Jalen McMillan, right? Ben Sinnoh. You never know what you can get in the mid, those mid rounds there. That's where I was getting Kyren Williams a couple years back.
Yeah. That's where I was getting a lot of Tank Dell last year. I know you were getting a lot of Puka.
Puka. Sure was.
There's not always a Puka, but
I was trying not to say it, but I appreciate that you brought it up.
Well, I had to do it for you. I wasn't in on Puka, but I was taking a lot of Tank Dell in the third round. I still feel darn good about that too. So
yes, sir. He was absolutely going in that round. All right. I think we got one more here. I think we got time for one more. Garrett Yan asks in the Discord, which players are immediately void in your rookie drafts if they get drafted by a specific team? So, you know, to kind of phrase this in a different way here, what's just a terrible landing spot that would tank a guy that you otherwise would like?
Man, that's a tough question. I feel like whatever quarterback goes to the Patriots, it's I don't know if it's going to be a complete avoid, but they're probably going to fall to fourth out of the four rookies. Maybe, I mean, it just depends. Like Daniels, he's not really dependent on having receiving weapons, so he might not drop as much for me. If McCarthy or Drake May went to the Patriots, I would have strong hesitations. We can put it that way. Or even the Commanders. I mean, Commanders is not a great spot either, but
I think with the Patriots, there seems to be an apparent belief that they're good with Brissett for this year in that they're expecting their quarterback to sit. And, you know, that could be good in the long run, but there will be a short-term value impact. I'm not worried about the scheme nearly as much as I am about, you know, do they have the pieces there? Are they going to want this rookie quarterback to wait a little bit longer? Because remember, it's not the Belichick scheme. It's really more of a Cleveland scheme. So I agree with you there. Yeah.
It's just more of like the complete lack of a supporting cast for whoever goes there.
Yeah.
Is rough. I mean, who is their wide receiver one right now? Is it like Kendrick Bourne or something? Like, I don't
probably. Yeah.
It's not good. Whoever it is.
DeMario Davis.
Yeah, I do like Pop Douglas a little bit, but
you know, when I look at this question, for me, I'm trying to think of like where there's not volume, but where a team may still invest in a player, right? That to me, I'm more concerned about than anything.
Right.
So I'm looking at a team like Detroit. I think it's possible Detroit takes a wide receiver in with that second pick, like 61. And now that's crowded because you got Laporta, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, and you have J-Mo still there. But they could look for a type of, you know, like a Roman Wilson or, you know, like a Jalen McMillan. And then it's just there's not going to be enough volume left over.
Right.
You know, there's talk of Indianapolis maybe targeting Brock Bowers or a wide receiver in the first. Like that's going to get. You know, that's a dig into the volume, and you've still got a youngish quarterback, right? So Indianapolis makes me more nervous than I think, you know, you would initially want from a wide receiver. Those are two spots right off the bat that feel murky to me.
It's always interesting, like when a team, because we can never predict this, right? We don't even conceive it as possible because they don't need it. Why would they do it? And then all of a sudden you have the Seahawks taking JSN and Zach Charbonnet and tanking both of their values because they don't need a wide receiver or a running back, but they did it anyway. And, you know, it's like you don't necessarily predict it ahead of time on a show like this one, but then it happens on draft night and you're like, I know it when I see it. And now I'm not drafting Zach Charbonnet. I did still draft JSN. And I mean, he's not like totally dead in the water, but Charbonnet – I mean, there were so many people that were like, well, look, he's still early second round draft capital. He's still this. And, you know, they're checking all the boxes and they're like, just take the discount.
Yeah.
And I didn't take the discount. I was like, I'm hard avoiding this situation. And I mean, you're basically like, because he still had an early second round rookie ADP.
Right.
And it would have been like, I mean, if you took him in the early second round, you're drafting a handcuff essentially with your early second round pick, which is not good business. And he's definitely decreased in value significantly. It's hard to say ahead of time, but after the draft, when you see it all, it's like I usually have a pretty good idea of which ones are like, I'm not taking that guy.
You know, I look at the other thing I'll look at, right, for a wide receiver, for example, I'm going to look at a quarterback that I just don't believe in or a situation where I think there could be turnover soon at the quarterback position, right? So I'm looking at Tennessee with Will Levis there. I think that they could target a wide receiver on day two. That would, you know, be unfortunate, I think, for that wide receiver. I would struggle. Even if you could look at it and say, oh, there could be some volume there. If you don't trust the quarterback or you feel like there may be turnover soon, that would be a challenging situation.
Well, they still have D-Hop, right? And they signed Ridley.
And so they have Ridley, And they have Burks.
Volume would be a pretty big question mark.
That's true. I keep forgetting, like, Hop actually had some legitimate volume last year.
Yeah, the interesting thing too was like Zay Flowers last year. So this is kind of the flip side of the coin where most people did not like that landing spot. I mean, Baltimore has kind of been a place of death for wide receivers and, you know, people love Lamar for a fantasy perspective, but not so sure about him in terms of supporting wide receivers and all that kind of stuff. That's where to me, I'm like, I will take the discount because the path to volume was very clearly there. I believed in the talent. The draft capital was still good. Let everybody else overreact to the landing spot. So it's more of an art than a science, but a lot of it, you're right. It has to do with volume. Can I project volume? Do I still like the talent? Is the draft capital still good? And if it is, then I can probably overlook what is perceived as a bad landing spot.
I think too, you know, thinking about the running back position, you have to be careful with just buying in to a running back who goes to a flashy offense, right? So I'm thinking of a few examples here. I'm thinking of Miami. I'm thinking of San Francisco. I'm thinking of Kansas City. These are spots where, you know, if a running back goes to one of these teams in round two or three, I do think folks could get excited about it. You know, maybe not San Francisco as much with CMC there, but for an example of like a flashy offense, people get excited about. Remember like Tyrion Davis Price, right?
Oh yeah.
Just understand with some of these hyper creative minded coaches and play callers, they could be drafting this running back for a particular part of their offense, right? You know, they may not be drafting them for the, you know, to carry the ball 200 times. And they could move on from these guys just as quickly as they get in on these guys. I mean, I think this is mostly an Andy Reid tweet, you know, that I'm laying out right now. It's like, remember that this team had Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Andy Reid fell in love with his sixth round pick, Isaiah Pacheco.
Right.
And he can fall out of love with Isaiah Pacheco just as quickly. Or he could fall out of love with, you know, Blake Corum, who he could draft at 64 and decide that, you know, he's not actually the guy that he wants. So just be a little bit careful with buying into just the offenses.
And some of those coaches too, like just because they're a genius with the X's and O's and drawing up plays and all that doesn't mean they're a genius drafter. Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned San Francisco, Tyrion Davis Price day two, like what the heck? Trey Sermon. I mean, you could go on and on. It's like, he has not had a good history of like their run scheme is great. And if a guy becomes the starting running back there, he's going to be fantasy gold. But their history of actually like drafting well at the running back position is pretty rough. I mean, Elijah Mitchell kind of looked like a value, but they didn't like him enough to stop him from trading for CMC, you know? So, and I think if I remember correctly, I think Elijah Mitchell was drafted in the same class as Trey Sermon. Trey Sermon was the guy they traded up for in on day two, and Elijah Mitchell was a day three pick. So it's you're totally right about that. I think that's a good call.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll just point out real quickly is you don't want a wide receiver in Jacksonville. Everybody's mocking a wide receiver in Jacksonville. There's enough mouths to feed in that offense between Ingram, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis. There's somebody else I'm forgetting about in
Zay
that
Flowers.
Offense. Yeah, there we go. There's
not Zay. Yeah, is it?
No, oh, not Zay.
That Zay Jones. It is Zay. It's just the wrong Zay. Zay Jones. I was like,
oh yeah. I was like, wait a second.
Zay Flowers is in Baltimore. Zay Jones.
Yeah. So there's mouths to feed there, and Evan Ingram I think had 100 targets last year too. Etienne and Tank are rotating out of the backfield too. So that's the last one I'll throw out there. You know, any kind of final words or final thoughts before we wrap up the mailbag? We have a big week of draft coverage coming up next week, but you know, any final thoughts before we get to that?
No, this was fun. Miss you, Skip. See you next week. But it was nice. I mean, this kind of got me thinking outside the box a little bit. I was like really having to think about some of these questions. So good stuff, guys.
Yeah, we purposely like we don't sit here and research all these answers ahead of time. We like to kind of talk through them like this, be a little bit more conversational. And you know, I love it, man. Like these are the questions I get to think about all day because the rookie big board Discord, man. I wake up, it's like 6 a.m. I wake up and there's like 15 messages waiting for me. I love it. It's absolute sicko season. I encourage honestly, folks, like you know, we have great resources, you know, the rankings, the one-on-one draft calls, the rookie guy. There's so much good stuff, but the Discord is worth it alone, man. It's just such an active spot. So I highly encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/rookiebigboard so you can get in on that. But with that being said, me and Cooper will be back at it with a nice, fun episode coming your way with a few other rookie big board favorites early next week. And we're going to be building up to draft night. It is coming up quick, folks. We have a ton of good coverage over there. So make sure you're subscribed. And why don't you go ahead and do us a favor, drop that 5-star review. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Rookie Big Board.